This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. A key witness in the case of former Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship took the stand Thursday. Ex-Performance Coal President Chris Blanchard. Blanchard's company ran the Upper Big Branch mine. In this week's episode of the podcast, Blankenship on Trial, host Scott Finn, reporter Ashton Mara, and former Assistant U.S. Attorney Mike Hissom discuss why Blanchard's testimony is allowing the prosecution to connect the dots from the coal mine up the food chain to Don Blankenship himself.
So Blanchard is really key to the prosecution's case. He was granted immunity from prosecution by the U.S. Attorney's Office in order to testify. Blanchard is making the connection between all of the bad things we've heard about going on in the mines, the water accumulation, the poor ventilation, pushing production over safety. He's the one connecting those dots back to Don. Multiple miners have testified to having water collections within the mine, sometimes as high as their chest, sometimes they'd say topped out or all the way to the ceiling. Blanchard testified that there was a plan in place to create trenches to drain the water, but that plan was canceled because it was taking too long and it pushed off production from the longwall itself. Blanchard testified today that he was on a phone call with Don Blankenship himself, who said to put the miner back into the longwall and start producing again. He said that Blanchard was, quote, letting MSHA run his coal mines. MSHA, of course, is the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration.
Ashton, we've been talking a lot about advance notice. It's this idea that people farther down in the mines were told in advance that MSHA inspectors would be showing up, and they were scrambling to basically try to improve things before the inspectors got there. What did Blanchard have to say about that?
Right. This is another instance where we're connecting the dots directly back to Don. We've heard from multiple miners, multiple dispatchers say they were directed to call underground, some of them even saying that Blanchard himself directed them to call underground. Blanchard said in his testimony today that he happened to call down to Don's office one time to tell him that he would have to miss a meeting because there were MSHA inspectors on site and somebody needed to escort them underground. Don had specifically asked him, do the crews underground know that those inspectors are there? Do they know that they're coming? And Blanchard, of course, said yes.
These things that Blanchard said were going on could have been fixed, according to him, with more men, more time, more money, and he says Blankenship told him no. Mike, what does that mean exactly for the conspiracy charges and for the fraud charges? What does this witness do to help the prosecution make that case?
Yeah, well, the conspiracy charges, Scott, are incredibly broad. It's one of the broadest tools that a federal prosecutor has. And the jury will be instructed by Judge Berger at the end of the presentation of evidence that they only need to find one overt act in furtherance of the conspiracy. So one thing that someone did in furtherance of the mutual agreement or understanding. And that thing does not have to have been done by Don Blankenship himself. And so when you have a witness connecting something directly to Don Blankenship and it's an understanding and agreement to violate the law, that's going to be powerful testimony if the jury credits it.
So it sounds like that they're building a case, Mike, that Blankenship, of course, was telling Chris to tell the people in the mine about to be notified. I mean, they're trying to connect all these dots and make it a solid line.
Yeah, and on the issue of advance notice, Scott, we can certainly expect the defense to continue to say, as they have throughout, that advance notice was commonplace in the industry. But remember, it gets lost in all the talk about violations and citations and the mine safety and health standards that there's another piece of count one, the conspiracy charge in count one, and that's a conspiracy to defraud MSHA. And the jury will be instructed that that's separate from a conspiracy to violate mine safety and health standards. That's a conspiracy that the object of it is to cover up or trick or deceive MSHA. The jury could convict on count one on the basis of advance notice alone. They could conclude that the advance notice to the working section, which we heard today allowed for an hour's period of time, if not longer, between the entry at the guard shack and the arrival at the working face. If there was some cover-up underfoot that allowed the people at the coal mine to deceive MSHA as to what was actually going on the ground, that could be enough to convict on count one if it's tied to Don Blankenship.
And if they believe Chris Blanchard.
Again, that was Scott Finn speaking with reporter Ashton Mara and Charleston attorney Mike Hissom about the latest in the trial of former Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship. To listen to the full podcast, visit our website, wvpublic.org, or subscribe on iTunes. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:49. Partly sunny skies today, temperatures in the 60s and 70s, partly cloudy overnight with lows in the 40s and 50s, partly sunny on Saturday, there's a slight chance of rain Saturday afternoon, highs in the 60s and 70s, rain likely Saturday night and Sunday.
Support for our weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at ErieInsurance.com. Call 1-800-RADIO-87 to pledge your support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting or go online, wvpublic.org.
A new video project highlights the West Virginia Mountain Music Trail. It's a music tourist trail that connects communities along U.S. Route 219, also known as the Seneca Trail. From Monroe County, it goes up to Greenbrier County in Lewisburg, up through Pocahontas County in Marlinden, up through some pretty intense mountains on the way up to Elkins. It finally ends in Tucker County and Thomas. Host Jessica Lilly has more on this week's Inside Appalachia. Here's an excerpt.
Tourism groups in West Virginia and West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Mountain Stage teamed up to promote the Mountain Music Trail and the state's music heritage. They've been working to create videos from stops along the trail. Mountain Stage's Vasilia Scores worked to produce those videos. Hey, Vaz.
Hi, Jessica.
My family played a lot of music around the kitchen table, and watching these videos of people dancing, singing, I have to say, the Purple Fiddle looks like a fun place to visit. What was that like?
It is a fun place to visit. Thomas, West Virginia is such a breath of fresh air. I mean, literally. It's a wonderful mountain town. It's full of creative people. We interviewed a gentleman named Blake Christiana, and he's from Yarn, which is actually a New York-based band. And I think he really summed it up when he was saying that the people in Thomas are living the life they want to live. That really stuck with me, and he's right. There's a strong spirit there, and they are the perfect example of what I would call a creative community. Tucker County does a wonderful job of supporting the local venues, who in turn support local musicians. I think in the end, we really hope to inspire people to jump in their car and get out there and explore these unique places and meet the people in these small towns like Thomas that we typically breeze by on our way to someplace else.
The first video I watched is about the Pocahontas Opera House in Pocahontas County. Now, from the video, it seemed like a well-preserved theater that the community really takes a lot of pride and ownership in. I also noticed the beautiful architecture of the building. And it just kind of seemed to stand for everything that the Mountain Music Trail is about. Bryn Cusick is the director of the Pocahontas County Opera House. She's on the video. Let's listen to how she describes the connection with the community.
We have, you know, a lot of places that people come out to see music and just a lot of local talent, as well as people who are drawn to this area. And so the Mountain Music Trail has really been an incredible blessing to the theaters and the musicians along this trail, to link them to each other as well, you know, as well as to bring in other folks to hear what we have to offer.
So it seems that the buildings have been well preserved, the family traditions and the music has been well preserved. Now, Vaz, you played a role in helping to preserve the stories by producing these videos. Thanks for sharing them with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Hear more about the Mountain Music Trail on Inside Appalachia Sunday morning at 7 and Sunday evening at 6 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. The West Virginia Music Hall of Fame will induct new members Saturday night. You can watch the ceremony live from the Culture Center in Charleston on West Virginia Public Broadcasting on television and online. John Ellison was born in Fayette County and moved to New York. He's being honored tomorrow night. So is Bob Thompson, who moved to West Virginia from New York. Thompson is a well-known jazz musician here and is the house pianist for Mountain Stage. Ellison wrote the song Some Kind of Wonderful in 1967. We sat down with both musicians yesterday. The song Some Kind of Wonderful.
Yes.
It said that you wrote that very quickly on your way to a recording studio.
That's correct.
Where did the phrase, some kind of wonderful, come from? Is it something that was in your head? Was it a phrase that was being used?
Well, during that period, you hear that was a common saying of somebody missing. Oh, you know, wow, you're some kind of wonderful. That was just a saying, and when I wrote the song, it was about this lady. I just said she had packed a lunch for me, and I looked at her and I said, you know what, you're some kind of wonderful.
Oh,
I'm gonna write a song about you.
Oh,
so that's how the song came about.
Can you sing a few bars?
Sure. I don't need a whole lot of money. I don't need a big fine car. I got everything that a man could want. I got more than I could ask for.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
There we go.
As you contemplate, as both of you contemplate on being inducted into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame. Bob, you first. Can you kind of give us a preview of what your induction speech will be about?
Well, I've been thinking about that, but really I just want to thank people because, you know, so many people gave me a helping hand, you know, and when I was trying to learn about the music and you know, when I became interested, and there were so many people that were so generous with their time and were willing to share some of the secrets, you know, with me. And, you know, the question that I get asked probably the most is people say, well, you know, playing jazz, why would you stay in West Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
And because people assumed that I was a jazz player who came to West Virginia and decided to stay here. But I came here as a student, and I learned to play here. This is where I learned the music, you know, in Charleston and the after-hours clubs like the Crazy Horse and places like that. And so many of the musicians like that were around here, Rabbit Jones, Frank Thompson, the late, great Ann Baker, who's also an inductee into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame. All of these people and many, many more helped me, you know, when I didn't know two songs to put together, you know, and they, so I had that opportunity here. So that's what's been so meaningful to me about this is that it's going to give me an opportunity to say thanks to people. Plus, it tells me that, you know, especially being born in New York and raised in New York, coming here, this means that I've been really accepted as a West Virginian and a part of the you know, the music history of West Virginia. So that means a lot to me.
It's interesting that John Ellison bought a one-way ticket out of West Virginia and Bob Thompson had a one-way ticket into West Virginia. But John Ellison, what have you been thinking about in terms of your induction speech?
Well, what comes to mind is my mind goes back to when I came home from working at the Carter Hotel in West Virginia, and I hadn't told my parents that I was leaving. And I walked in and I told my mom was at, she was washing clothes, and I looked at her and said, Mom, I said, I'm leaving. And she said, what do you mean you're leaving? I said, I'm going to New York. And she thought I was joking. And she said, boy, I don't have time for this. Can't you see I'm busy? And I said, Mom, I'm serious. I said, I bought a one-way ticket. And I showed her the ticket. And so what goes through my mind as far as my speech, I look back at that time and I think, I remember looking over the mountains and thinking I had this dream and this determination to do something with my life other than go into the coal mines. And a lot of people said to me I was crazy, I wasn't going to make it. So for me, it's a feeling of accomplishment and me being born here and did something with my life, I want to be an inspiration, and I've tried to be an inspiration throughout the years to let other young people know that if you have a dream, hold on to it because dreams become reality. And as long as you believe in, I always say, believe in the man upstairs, believe in yourself, that there's nothing impossible for you to do. So that's going to be my message.
Bob Thompson and John Ellison, congratulations on your inductions to the West Virginia Hall of Fame. And thank you. The West Virginia Music Hall of Fame induction ceremony will be held this Saturday night at 7:30 at the Culture Center in Charleston. You can see it live on television and online from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. I'm Beth Voorhees.